You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
Welcome to another edition of Sid Weighs In, the podcast where I talk about one of my recent BBC columns with a guest host. And today, I'm very fortunate to have Morgan McLean as my guest host. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Doing well.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I was in one of Professor Finkelstein or Sidney's classes.
You got to call me Sid. It's Sid Weighs In.
Okay, Sid. So I was in Sid's class in the fall semester. I'm a first year here at Tuck. And I'm interested in consumer products after school. So he was a great professor, and I'm excited to talk with him today.
Have you ever done any podcasts before?
I have not.
How about any type of media, TV, anything like that?
Not really.
So this is kind of your debut, right?
Yes.
This is great. So this could be the big break. What are we going to talk about today, Morgan? What's our topic?
Our topic is meeting malpractice. How can you have great meetings?
And have you had some not so great meetings?
I have had some not so great meetings. I've also had some great ones. So
what have you seen over the years in your pre-Tuck lifetime?
Well, and I was a consultant before Tuck, and I think one of the biggest things about meetings is just clarity for everyone involved. So having some clear agenda and some clear discussion topics can really help move things along.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And this topic of meeting malpractice, when I first wrote the column a little while ago, a lot of people got in touch with me and said this is exactly what they want to talk about because it drives people crazy because it's a total waste of time. I wonder... Have you noticed a good use of time in the classroom as well?
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of the professors actually plan out what they're going to write on the board at what point, and you can tell when that happens and you can tell when it doesn't.
Well, on that note, I guess I better start. Okay, meeting malpractice. With summer in full swing, our thoughts naturally turn to barbecues, beaches, and vacations. It's a time of year when you can easily find yourself daydreaming when you should be paying attention. And then, as if in a nightmare, you realize you're seated around a table, listening to people you don't really want to hear from, people who are saying things you don't really need to know. Yes, you are in a meeting at work, and you can't escape. Is this the cruel fate all office dwellers must endure? The answer is, perhaps surprisingly, no. So many people are subject to what I call meeting malpractice that it's a wonder the trial lawyers haven't caught on to this one yet. The good news is that somewhere out there, savvy managers refuse to play along. They're holding on to this quaint belief that meetings are opportunities for smart people to learn, to debate, and to discuss, and for accountability to be assigned for actions and results. So, what is meeting malpractice, and what can we do about it? Meeting malpractice usually starts before the meeting begins. The meeting request comes in with only the barest notion of its purpose. Task force meeting, team meeting, and the classic update. But there's no agenda, there's no raison d'etre attached to justify this incursion into our busy workday. A meeting without an agenda is like a restaurant dinner without a menu. It's true that a great chef's creations can surprise and delight, but I've yet to see the same skill set extend to managers. Clear meeting agendas have multiple benefits. You know what to do in advance to prepare. The meeting convener can rely on the agenda to keep the discussion from drifting into irrelevant territory, and everyone knows when the meeting is done. Clear, concise, and professional. Wouldn't it be great, Morgan, if life was a little bit more like that?
Definitely.
But alas, it's not, because we all live in this world of meetings. If there are controversies, that will be disruptive. Concessions that need to be extracted or favors that need to be called in. The hard work of handling these needs to happen before the meeting. In all but brainstorming sessions, there's value in at least some choreography ahead of time. Meeting malpractitioners know none of this. They turn off their political antennas and are forced to rely on either brute force, which ensures minimal buy-in, or pleading, which ensures minimal respect, to reach some semblance of agreement. As important as preparation is to avoid meeting malpractice, the greatest meeting crimes are perpetrated when all participants are assembled. It starts at the beginning. The meeting is called for 9 o'clock, but people drift in for a few minutes afterwards, chatting about what they've watched on television the night before. Here's a complicated solution. Wear a watch and use it. Starting a meeting late, or finishing late for that matter, is as good a measure of the lack of managerial discipline as any I've seen. It may take a few tries until people catch on, but they will. And even better, They'll value starting on time because it provides certainty and it conveys competence. How you handle the first few minutes of a meeting also can be quite revealing. Consider a manager, let's call her Mary, an expert in meeting malpractice. After waiting longer than she should to start, she launches into a lengthy discourse on something that is only mildly related to the meeting topic. She allows herself to be interrupted by the Donald Trump of the team, the person who always believes he knows more than anyone else, and she is somehow unaware of the knowing smiles and arched eyebrows that his coworkers display once Donald starts in on whatever his personal agenda is that day. The reaction is muted, however, since most people around the table are already checking emails on their smartphones. Effectively managing a meeting in real time is like being an ice hockey coach. The first tenet, make sure the right people are in the room or on the ice, and that the wrong people aren't. Give people short shifts by limiting airtime, ensuring you use your whole bench. Draw on specialized expertise inside and outside of the room during key moments, penalty kills. To win, everyone must contribute, not just the loudest person, the most senior person, and the person you're most comfortable with. Among the most egregious offenses of meeting malpractice is letting time be taken up with presentation after presentation, leaving no room for real debate, discussion, and decision-making. How many board meetings are run this way? Almost as if the chief executive officer is trying to run out the clock. If you don't ban PowerPoint slides, at least put a time limit on their use. Even better, why not expect people to review the slides and other informational material in advance so that face time can be dedicated to work that can't be effectively accomplished offline? You know, I've really seen that in a lot of the board work that I've done. A PowerPoint slide after PowerPoint slide, and imagine how much wasted time. And board meetings is one of those things where you have 2 days, maybe 3 days, people are flying in from all over the place, and you use up half or more of the time for these formal presentations that you don't really need to do. Much better to be talking, to be debating. But maybe that's what the CEO sometimes wants, run out the clock. So finally, the meeting ends. What happens next? Can't think of anything? Exactly. There is no other investment of time an organization regularly makes for which returns are less closely managed. Meetings must end with follow-up assignments or accountabilities, whether that's a call for more analysis or for executing on a decision. And those accountability should be delivered on time, not 7:30 p.m. on a Friday. Avoiding meeting malpractice will not solve all of our problems in an era of tremendous globalization and technological disruption, but I bet it's a great way to start.
What really struck me about this column is that you mentioned structuring meetings effectively is a really great way to communicate to employees that you respect their time and you respect their contributions. How have you seen companies do this well?
It's a funny thing because some of this is national differences too. Uh-huh. So if I'm working, say, with the Swiss are the best, I guess Germans as well. They're there. If we're starting at 8 a.m., 5 to 8, everyone's in their seat and ready for action. The Japanese can be like that as well. Americans, so-so, and of course, guess who are the worst at that?
I don't know. Who?
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble because I think they have computers in Italy, yes, the Italians, and actually a lot of the Latin American, punctuality is kind of just an estimate. It's a suggestion. And so you're not respecting other people's time. It sounds like such a trivial thing, but I think people respect and want to be respected for what they're doing, and everyone has a million things to do. And so it's also a symbolic thing, just kind of sets things in motion. You don't start on time. People don't really manage the time well, and you're implying, you're sending out this symbolic thing that says, you're not that important to me. Right. It's actually one of my pet peeves about people in general that show up late to meetings or late to go out, late to meet people for dinner or something. I mean, I try not to get too freaked out about things like that. In the scheme of things, not that big a deal, but you got to respect other people.
I agree. What have you seen differences culturally in terms of making decisions also in meetings? It seems like sometimes people want to take everyone's viewpoint into account, and maybe that actually hinders the work getting done.
Yeah. And there's different ways to do it. Part of it is it depends on what you're trying to accomplish in the meeting. Some meetings are clear decision-making meetings, and you just kind of have to figure it out. The biggest cultural difference, some of it is country-based and some of it is just corporate culture type-based, sometimes you have someone who, the leader of the team in the meeting that manages the situation, wants to hear some discussion but really doesn't want a lot because you don't want to let it get out of control. And you want to be able to kind of say, okay, everyone had their voice. Everyone had a chance to talk about it. Let's just go forward and do it. Other times you get the real open discussion. You have to be, I think, a particularly strong leader to handle the open discussion thing, because it can go in different directions, and you better be able to manage that. And you have to have, you know, you have to have quite a bit of self-confidence, because maybe, you know, it starts going in a direction you don't want, and it's hard to say, well, the meeting is over. I mean, you hear things like that.
Just one more thought, Sid. I was thinking about how it might be nice if companies can kind of create a culture of people excusing themselves from meetings where they don't have a role, and that might cut down on some of this meeting malpractice.
And so you've seen people just kind of show up to be there?
Sure, I've seen that. And I think they also feel like maybe they have to be there, or there's some sort of requirement that they be there to sort of stay informed when maybe that could be accomplished.
What is it? Their parents are told them to go to the meeting?
Right.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's sort of a thing that just kind of builds over time, and then they feel like they can't excuse themselves because someone might be upset with them. They aren't present to give input if necessary. But sometimes that can be accomplished after the meeting with an email.
I've seen that actually is in nonprofit boards.
Interesting.
They're also very big because there's so many constituencies and people just pile in. And actually in some companies where they don't have the tight direction as well, you do see, as I reflect on it in some of the companies I've worked with, I've seen that. So what's our bit of advice for people on that one? What should we tell them?
Well, start a dialogue. You know, ask people what your role is in a meeting before you go in, and you might be surprised by the answer. Sometimes you have a really key role, sometimes you don't.
And imagine you get all that free time and you don't have to go in all those meetings. What a great thing that would be.
It's great. You can get some work done.
You know, meeting is one of those things. Everyone listening to this podcast has dealt with it. They'll deal with it. They may even be listening while they're in the back of a room at a meeting right now. And if that's the case, I hope this is even more enjoyable than the meeting that you're at. Morgan, thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.